Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 31, 2017, or is the 9th day of A, 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Just When I Need Him Most. Just when I need him, Joshua is near. Just when I falter, just when I fear, ready to help me, ready to cheer, just when I need him most. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most, Joshua is there to comfort and cheer, just when I need him most. Just when I need him, Joshua is true, never forsaking all the way through, giving for burdens, pleasures of you. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most, just when I need him most, Joshua is there to comfort and cheer, just when I need him most, just when I need him, Joshua is strong. Bury my burdens all the day long. Water all my sorrow, giving a song. Just when I need him most. Just when I need him most. Just when I need him most. Joshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most. Just when I need him, he is my all. Misery when upon him I call. Tenderly watching lest I should fall. Just when I need him most. That's when I need him most. Just when I need him most. Joshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most.
Part 17. Prophecies of the Daniel and Revelation. Shepherd Rock, Volume 2, page 231. We're dealing with the 11th hour call and the third angel's message. Thus the message of the third angel will be proclaimed as the time comes for it to be given with the greatest power. For the Yahweh will work through his humble instruments, leading by the leading of the minds of those who consecrate themselves unto his service. For the laborers will be qualified rather by the unction of his spirit than by the training of the literary institution. Men of the faith and prayer will be constrained. Let's do that again. Men of the faith and prayer will be constrained for the going forth with the holy zeal, with the declaring of the words that the Yahweh gives unto them. For the sins of the Babylon will be laid open. The fearful results of the enforcing of the observances of the House of Israel by the civil authority for the inroads of the spiritual liaison, the stealthy but rapid progress of the papal power, all will be unmasked. By these solemn warnings, the people will be stirred. Thousands upon thousands will listen who have never heard words like these. In the amazement, they hear the testimony that the Babylon is the church fallen because of her errors and sin, because of her rejection of the truth sent unto her from the heaven. Now, you notice when the word Babylon appears here. Well, this is the Adventist as the forerunner of this event of Babylon itself rejecting the truth. The Adventist having apostatized, there's only one place where they could reside, and that is in the house of Babylon. And we know that they rejected a new ray of light that's ever come to her. And it's not because the saints didn't want to hear the truth and accept it. They were longing for it. They've always been longing to hear the new truth unfold. It's those apostatized, infiltrated, Jesuit Catholic influence that has been allowed to come in because the leadership went to sleep. The watchmen on the walls of Zion went to sleep. Let us continue. As the people go unto their former teachers with the eager inquiry, are these things so? Now notice it said to their former teachers. The ministers present fables, prophesy smooth things for the soothing of their fears and for the quieting of the awakened conscience. Since many refuse to be satisfied with the mere authority of men and demand a plain, thus saith the Yahweh, the popular ministry like the Pharisees of old, filled with the anger as their authority is questioned, will denounce the message of Satan and stir up the sin-loving multitudes for the reviling and persecuting of those who proclaim the truth. That's in Great Controversy 606 and 607. For the 11th hour call, in the reality, is similar unto that of the 9th hour call. Of the ninth. Okay. Let's do it again. For the 11th hour call, and the reality is similar unto that of the 9th hour call. The 11th hour, when it struck in 1970, that was the beginning of the 11th hour, there would be a call then for the leader of the 11th hour, the new appointed leader, Verlis W. Johnson then, to repeat in a similar way the call that Ellen G. White had in 1844 for the 10th hour. To start the 10th hour. So you say that the 9th hour call, there was no 9th hour call. Because William Miller had the 7th, 8th, and 9th hour. He closed out the 9th hour. Ellen G. White had the call for the next hour after the ninth hour. And that was, so you would say, for the 11th hour call is similar to that of the, Vrityahata says the ninth hour call. Well, this is true. The ninth is mentioned in the scriptures, not the tenth in the parable, but still, the ninth hour ended in 1844. And William Miller had the ninth hour himself, and it was the third hour, because William Miller was called at the end of the sixth hour to work the seventh, eighth, and ninth hour. So, Verlis Johnson was called in 1970 to work the 11th hour. Ellen G. White was called. Ellen G. White was called in 1844 to do her work in the 10th parabolic hour. So, then that way, then you'd say that the 11th hour is similar to that of the 10th hour call of 1844. 10th hour call came in 1844. The 11th hour call came in 1970. Okay, let's do it again. For the 11th hour call in 1970, in reality, is similar to that of the 10th hour call of 1844. For Ellen G. White and the little Advent band, is repeated with additional mention of the corruption in the churches. With additional mention. So, now in 1970, I was there at the beginning of the 11th hour with Rhoda Johnson at the helm. And the theme was that the Adventist church is more corrupt in 1970 than it was ever any time before, back to 1844. That she just grew more corrupt as she rejected the truth, every ray of light, as she rejected every ray of light given unto her at the prophetic interval, then she became more corrupt. So in 1888, the Adventists as a movement had their first test. They came to a prophetic timeline fulfillment of a 40-year period that was allotted for their first feeding pastor, and that was the feeding pastor only fed them the three angels' messages. Vation, the first feeding pastor. 1850, at the birth of the testimony, marked the beginning of the first 40-year period and the first feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist congregation, and that was Mount Bashan. So they fed at Mount Bashan for 40 years, 1850 to 1890. Well, 2 years before that 40-year period was up, Yahweh sent two messengers. Their name, Jones and Wagner. And they had a message of righteousness by faith. Three words. Well, that don't really tell anybody anything, just the title, other than that you've got a new message here, and it has to deal with key words. Righteousness by faith. Now, this is the first time they've ever been introduced to that subject of righteousness by faith from here on in. In other words, Yahweh was sending a message telling the Adventists that from this point on now, you're going to be practicing righteousness by the faith. And lo and behold, all they had to do is go back and research a little bit. And with Martin Luther, the first reformer coming out of the Catholic Church, 1500 A.D., and just investigate and read his little book that they wrote on him about how when he found that scripture of Romans 1:17 and Habakkuk 2:2, where the just shall live by faith. Well, it's the same thing as the righteousness, or the righteous shall live by faith. It's the same thing as the saints shall live by faith. Not the sinners. The saints shall live by faith. Okay? So, Adventists rejected that message in 1888-1890, caused by the new leadership that had appeared, according to the prophecy of Zechariah 6, about that double span of horses that was connected to that fourth chariot, and that fourth chariot represents the Adventist denomination, and she had a double leadership. But they didn't know this. Ellen G. White didn't know this. But if she didn't, she didn't write about it. Or if she did, she didn't write about it. But if she'd have known about it, she'd have recognized that as being in the form of her husband and herself. She'd have recognized her husband, and I think in her heart she knew it. She knew that her husband longed to be the leader of the Adventist Church. And he couldn't understand why he couldn't be. That's the reason why he led the way for the forming of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists in 1863. James White thought he was just organizing their little movement into an organized body, and he didn't realize that he was creating another leadership when he did that. He didn't realize that. That by him lending his influence to organize the Seventh-day Adventist Church into an organization and develop a church manual, he didn't realize that. He was setting up a whole new hierarchy of leadership, and that it would be in conflict with his wife's leadership as the voice of inspiration, with the title of a prophetess, with the understanding of present tense prophecy that was unfolding. So that should have been enough. If her husband, James White, had realized that if he had organized the General Conference after the pattern of the law of Moses and went and set that up, he had the clear indication that should be done that way, because when Sister White interpreted the 2300-day prophecy's fulfillment, she said, "We found out the disappointment of William Miller and his little band. That they interpreted the cleansing of the sanctuary wrong. They thought that the cleansing of the sanctuary for the Millerites would be by the Yeshua coming to the earth and to take his waiting saints into the clouds and burn the earth up with the fire." And that's what he taught was the cleansing of the sanctuary. And that would take place in 1844 and so forth. So, Sister White says, well, after the Adventists took over in 1844, they went back and studied the law of Moses, and they found out that there is a place in the scriptures that talks about the sanctuary. It has a place in services. And that it had been trampled underfoot by the man of sin during the Dark Ages. And that it had been thrown down and trampled underfoot. And she determined by inspiration that that was the restoring of the sanctuary. It would be to set up the law of Moses again. Well, see, she said, and she wrote this down, she said, that the sanctuary is to be restored back to its rightful order. But that should have been enough for her husband, James White, to say, well, we need to form an organization. And we need to form it after the pattern that Moses formed in the wilderness with the 70 elders. We need to form it after that pattern. And then we can have a general conference, organization-like, and we can have Ellen G. White as the head of it, and then as the people join the congregation of the over the years, as they join, then when we get to 70, where we can anoint 70 elders to teach the truth of the restoration of the sanctuary, then we will have a general conference body governed after the law of Moses and so forth. But instead, with no knowledge of this, Yahweh didn't give it to him. Ellen G. White allowed her husband. She allowed him. He wanted to do it, and she allowed him to do it. She didn't have to allow that. She could have rejected that idea and said, No, you're not going to do that. You're not going to usurp your authority over me and do something that heaven don't approve of. No. But she didn't have enough knowledge at the time either. So it looked innocent enough, and so her husband, James White, proceeded to organize and get a foundation laid. And of course, those old Jesuits of the Seventh-day Adventists, they were right there. They were right there to put their stamp of approval on that situation. And so we know the rest of the story. So the General Conference were well organized by 1890, and they usurped their authority over Ellen G. White, and they become the power and the governing body of the Seventh-day Adventists. And so they had the authority over Ellen G. White. They sent her where they wanted to send her in the field. They sent her to Australia. They sent her to Europe. They sent her around because she had all these books that she had written, and they needed the revenue from those books in order to keep growing as a governing body of the Adventists. They had to have revenue. But Sister White was the one that had the revenue. So that's the reason why they didn't just kick her out, because she had the revenue, and she could generate the revenue. So the two bodies were formed, the two leadership, the bay horses and the grizzly horses, pointed out there in Zechariah 6. And so from that point on, the Adventist Church became more corrupt as the years went by. From 1890, they had a 40-year spiritual fast for Judah, there according to Ezekiel 4. And by 1930, Yahweh raised up another prophet out of the midst of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, V.T. Hutto, with a new message for Mama, for the SDA. Ellen G. White had been dead 15 years now. She died in 1915, and so 15 years later, Yahweh raised up another prophet. And you know what happened there? They kicked that prophet out of the church. The General Conference kicked him out. But why didn't they kick Ellen G. White out? Because, as I said before, she's the one that had the revenue. She's the one that could generate the revenue for the General Conference to function and grow on. Without her, they would have no revenue. So their existence depended upon Ellen G. White and her writings, but not V.T. Hardy. They didn't need his financial assistance, so it was easy to just kick him on out. They'd already put Ellen G. White under their thumb, and so they knew this free spirit of this new prophet, they wouldn't be able to put him under their thumb. So they kicked him out. So the Adventist church became more corrupt. They went further on down into Babylon. They went further on back into Babylon. And so by the next 40 years, 1930 to 1970, Yahweh raised up a new messenger. But the 40-year period for the shepherd rod, B.T. Hardy died in the midst of it, and 25 years into the 40-year period, he died. And he left the rod movement that had a 40-year period without the voice of inspiration, but he had a successor. But B.T. Hardy did not appoint that successor before he died. He didn't appoint any successor. But Ben Roden, being the senior officer, and next to V.T. Hardy, he took the reins of the leadership after V.T. Hardy died. And he closed out the 15-year period for that 40-year allotted time for the rod. And he wouldn't give up his leadership role, but Yahweh took it from him. And passed it on to Royalist W. Johnson. Well, the rod period under Roden, the last 15 years, 1955 to 70, became so corrupt, more corrupt than the Adventists had ever become under Ben Roden. Corrupt, evil to the core. Ben Roden's wife went off into that female Holy Spirit, started her own new religion, her own movement, and he allowed it. Of course, that was after that 40-year period was up. That was in 1973 when that happened. And then Ben Roden died in 1978 from a horrible death that he had prophesied himself would take place at that very time. And then his wife died about 8 years later of a horrible death of breast cancer. And then their son succeeded the Rodens, the Lois Roden, or his mother, Buck Roden, and he died a horrible death. He was murdered by the security guards in prison because Buck Roden had murdered his best friend. That's reading Buck Roden had to go to prison. And then he got the same dose of medicine in prisons. One of the guards killed him, broke his neck, got tired of fooling with him. And so that brought the rod, and then if that wasn't enough, the man that with a gun battle took over the new Mount Carmel from the Rodens, named David Koresh, he called himself David Koresh, Vernon Howell was his original name, and lo and behold, he was more evil than Buck or Lois Roden or Ben Roden ever thought about then. And he was so evil that Yahweh had to send the U.S. military in there and bomb that place and burn it down and kill everybody on the property. So that's how the shepherd rod finally come to an end, and that was a legacy they left in the world for the world to know. This is a legacy that the shepherd rod movement left. So you want to tell? I want to tell you that every time a movement rejected new truth, they became more corrupt. corrupt, and now where are we at today? Adventists are so diabolically corrupt that all you have to do is go read Ezekiel chapter 8, and it tells you exactly how corrupt they have become. And I'm going to go read that right now. Now, the wording over the top of this here, chapter 8 of Ezekiel 8, reads like this. Ezekiel sees idols and abominations. Where does he see them at? He sees them in the house of Israel and Judah. Let's read it now. Verse 1, Ezekiel 8. And it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, in the fifth day of the month, as I sat in mine house, and the elders of Judah sat before me, that the hand of the Yahweh Elohim fell there upon me. And I beheld, and lo, a lightness as the appearance of the fire, from the appearance of his loins even downward, fire, and from his loins even upward, as the appearance of the brightness, as the color of amber. And he put forth the form of an hand, and took me by a lock of mine head, and the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven, and brought me in the vision of the Yahweh unto Jerusalem, unto the door of the inner gate that looketh toward the north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy, which provoketh the jealousy. And behold, the glory of the Elohim of Israel was there, according unto the vision that I saw in the plain. Then said he unto me, Son of man, lift up thine eyes now unto the way toward the north. So I lifted up mine eyes unto the way toward the north, and behold, northward at the gate of the altar, this image of the jealousy in the entry. He said furthermore unto me, Son of man, seest thou what they do, even the great abominations that the house of Israel committed here, that I should go far from my sanctuary? Now, I want to show you something here I just read. It says, and behold, northward, at the gate of the altar, this image of the jealousy and the entry. What's that image of the jealousy? It says an altar. This image of the jealousy. What does an altar represent? It represents altar of remission and the first apartment of the sanctuary where the high priest make remissions for the sins of the people. That's where the first process starts, by the sprinkling of the blood on the four horns of the altar. Now, what does the scripture say about Yahweh being a jealous Yahweh? So he is very jealous. And when he sees you substituting his ordained system of true worship with a false system of worship, then he becomes very jealous. So in this sanctuary, there is an image of jealousy, and it's at the altar of remission for the remission of sin. All right, now with that in mind, let's go ahead and continue reading. But turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations. And he brought me unto the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. Then said he unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall, and when I had digged in the wall, behold, a door. And he said unto me, Go in, and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And you cannot say house of the Adventist Church unless you include the shepherd rod, the Davidian's house, and Gilead Center's house. Of Gilead Center. Because that represents the whole house of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. In other words, it represents the whole house of Israel today. You can't say just the Seventh-day Adventist alone. You have to include her daughters in it. Now, it says the vineyard of the house of the Yahweh, the vineyard of the Yahweh, of Yahshua of the host, is in the house of Israel. So, the vineyard in the house of Israel today would be the Seventh-day Adventist congregation, the church. It would be the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, and it would be the branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventist that I was a part of for 33 years at Kermit, Texas. Those three, those three branches, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead, represents the feeding pastures for the whole house of Israel for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So, when you say the idols of the house of Israel, well, the shepherd rod, the Davidians, certainly had plenty of idols. And all the Davidians made an idol of V.T. Hoddock when he was alive. But after he died, they set up their own idols, and they vacated the place, and they scattered to the four winds of the heavens all over the world, and set up their own organizations, and set up their own idols. Okay? So it says, so I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beast, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about. Now Ezekiel is seeing this at the end of the whole house of Israel sojourn here in the last day, when they have come to their end. Ezekiel sees this vision, showing what they're doing when they come to their end. This is what brought them to their end. And there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel. There's that 70. Remember I told you a while ago that James White, if it had a full knowledge of how to set up an organization for their little movement, they would have set it up after the pattern of the law of Moses and the 70 elders in the wilderness that Moses set up. Okay, and there stood, better yet, if they had gone to the New Testament and read where the apostles anointed and set up seven deacons to join their apostleship, to join the 12 apostles. Paul talked about setting up the seven deacons, having them anointed, be a part of their ministry. Alright? And there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel, and in the midst of them stood Jezaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of the incense went up. Then said he unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery. For they say, the Yahweh seeth us not, the Yahweh hath forsaken the earth. He said also unto me, turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations that they do. Then he brought me unto the door of the gate of the Yahweh's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for the Tammuz. Then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abomination than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Yahweh's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Yahweh, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Yahweh, and their faces toward the east, and they worshiped the sun toward the east. Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing unto the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with the violence, and have returned to provoke me unto anger, and lo, they put the branch unto their nose. Therefore will I also deal in fury. Mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear them. And then we know what Ezekiel 9 is all about. It's the five angels with the slaughtering weapons and the man with the rider's ink horn. And this is the prophecy for the judgment beginning at the house of Yahweh. And that judgment has already begun. It began at the starting of the Passover 2002 at the ancient men for the house. It started with us at Gilead Center there in Kermit, Texas, 2002. I was there all the way through it. I was the one that Yahweh used to help bring that situation to a close. And so I know when Ezekiel 9 started. So having said all of that, I'm going to go ahead now and read Ezekiel 9. Yahweh judges the iniquities. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, Cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. Now notice it says, cause them that have charge over the city. Did you know that Yahweh had put me in charge over the city of Gilead Center? He had put me in charge of it as the antitypical David, that he was sitting up as the successor of the brother W. Johnson. He had placed me in charge. And I know the day that he did it. I think if I could find my records on that, it would be about January 27th, 2001. When he told me to do something about the corruption in the church and this trouble, and the number one troublemaker, this Amy DeLong, Alan's wife, his first wife, and long gone wife, was causing, of course she had an evil spirit, she was been causing trouble for 13 years. She had just kept that church in disruption for 13 years. Everybody each other's throats. And Yahweh says, told me, get up and do something about it. And I said, I'm going to do something about it starting today. And he showed me the instrument to use, Matthew 18. And I wrote it, I put it down, and I wrote the letter, and I started that in motion. Delivered it to that lady that very day. And so, having done that, 18 months later, that brought Gilead Center to a close. Took 18 months to bring for that to happen. But it happened. And so it says, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And when it says, comma, even every man. So now it says there are those that have charge over the city, and in addition to those that have charge over the city, there's also those five angels with swords in their hands that stand behind them. And it says, even them, also bring them along. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lies toward the north. And every man with a slaughter weapon in his hand. I add the preposition with. And one man among them is clothed. I put a present tense verb in the place of the past tense verb was, with linen. with a rider's inkhorn by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. Now remember, we read about that altar of jealousy there, the image that was an altar there in the entry of the sanctuary, that in Ezekiel chapter 8, that I read to you right there. It says, verse 5, the gate of the altar, this image of the jealousy in the entry. Okay, back to Ezekiel 9, it says, and one man among them was clothed with a linen with a rider's inkhorn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. Now it said one of these men had a rider's inkhorn by his side. And the glory of the Yahweh of the Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was. Now, what's this cherub? Is this a traveling throne? This is a traveling throne of Yahweh. It had come to this earth. It had come to the threshold of the house of the Seventh-day Adventist Church at Gilead Center, 2002. It's Kermit, Texas. Whereupon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called unto the man clothed with the linen, which had the rider's inkhorn by his side. So he called that man. He said, in other words, I want you to write down this here, what's taking place. Okay, and the Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city. So he said unto this man of the rider's inkhorn. And the Yahweh said unto him, the man of the rider's inkhorn, go through the midst of the city. What does it mean? It says go in there in the very middle of the city of the Seventh-day Adventists. Well, then he had to go through a door. He had to come and go and enter in through a door. So this angel with the rider's inkhorn, he was instructed to go through that door that's on the threshold where it came to, the threshold at Gilead Center, said, go through there. Go through that door there at Kermit, Texas. And he said, and I'll read the rest of it. And the Yahweh said unto me, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem means all of the subsidiaries and all of the suburbs around about the city. And set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. So, this midst then was taking place at Gilead Center. He says, go into the middle of Gilead Center. Not yet into the middle of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, but go to the middle and go right in the midst of Gilead Center. And unto the others he said in mine hearing, go you after him through the city and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have you pity. Okay, so he says, and unto the other he said, go ye after him, go after that man through rider's inkhorn, go through the city, and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. So who was the ancient man at Gilead Center? Brother W. Johnson. He was the most ancient one there. in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, which represents the whole Adventist church. And he said unto me, verse 7, defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go ye forth, and they went forth and slew in the city. So, they started Gilead Center. They brought Gilead Center to judgment, and those that had the mark, he brought them through the judgment. How fortunate we are, those of us that came through that and are sitting here today reading these present truth messages from the Yahweh, from the Holy Spirit, by the Holy Spirit. And in verse 8 it says, and it came to pass, while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, Oh, Yahweh Elohim, wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel, and thou point out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? So now he said, Will thou destroy all the residue? Well, what does it mean, all the residue? And in other words, all of those that didn't have a mark on them, said, are you going to destroy all of those that didn't get the mark at the beginning? You mean everybody that didn't get the mark, slay every last one of them? And that's what it means. Destroy all the residue of Israel? Isn't in that point out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? Then said ye unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah, my lawgiver. And when it says and Judah, Israel is the Seventh-day Adventist church proper here. Judah is Gilead Center. Okay. Is exceedingly great. And the land is full of blood, and the city full of perverseness. For they say, the Yahweh hath forsaken the earth, and the Yahweh seeth not. And as for me, also my eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity. But I will recompense their way upon their head. And behold, a man clothed with the linen, which had the inkhorn by his side, reported the matter, saying, I have done as thou hast commanded me. So, folks, then Yahweh destroyed all the residue of those that didn't have the mark. Every last one. Clean the camp. Now, you understand when Samuel was dealing with King Saul. Yahweh appointed King Saul. I mean, he's the one that approved of him and had Samuel to anoint him and fill him with another spirit, give him a different spirit, so that he could do his work as the leader of Israel, as the king over Israel. And so all King Saul had to do was obey all of Yahweh's commands. Whatever Samuel instructed him to do, all he had to do was just do what everything Samuel instructed him to do, knowing that it was from Yahweh indirectly. And that's all he had to do. And he would have victory after victory, success after success. But we know what happened. King Saul would not obey 100% of any command Samuel gave to him. It didn't make any difference what it was. He wouldn't 100% carry it out. He always made reservations. And that's exactly what Verlus Jumpy Johnson did. He was antithetical King Saul in this respect. And he would make reservations. And he would not carry out the full commands of Yahweh. He would not enforce them. He started that from the very beginning of his ministry. And that was a telling thing on his ministry. I was there to witness it every step of the way. So, Yahweh put me in charge of this prophecy. And I recognized the unfolding of it at the time that it started unfolding. And he put me in charge of it. Well, we're rocking along here pretty close to the end of our studies this hour. We got a couple of minutes. I want to go back and close out with the Shepherd Rod Volume 2 where I left off earlier. The 11th hour call and the reality is similar to that of the 9th hour call. In other words, 1970 call for Gilead Center was similar to that call in 1844 for Ellen G. White and the Little Advent Band. Call is repeated. So, actually, I answered the 11th hour call at the end of the 11th hour in 2002. And so this is really what Vitiana was talking about. It is similar to that of the 9th hour call that took place at the end of William Miller's ministry in 1844. An additional mention of the corruption in the churches, also light and force is added unto it. Now, I just got to reading to you about all the corruption. There was additional corruptions in the Adventist church. And so, our next subtitle here would be, our next title to be continue this study would be, Why Stand Ye Idle? And so, we're going to reserve that for our next study. And we're going to bring this message to a close. Whosoever will, whosoever is, it shall start the sound. Send the blessed tidings all the world around. Spread the joyful news wherever man is found. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Bethlehem Hill. There's a loving Father of the wonder hall. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever cometh need not delay. Now the door is open, enter where you may. Yahshua is the truth, the holy living way. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Bethlehem Hill. There's a loving Father calls the wanderer home. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, is loved evermore. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Ben Hill. There's a loving Father, cause a wonder home.